George Lansbury, a featured article from Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia. The text of this article is licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License, which can be viewed at www.gnu.org/copyleft/FDL.html. My name is Matthew David Gonzalez. I'm in Chicago, in London. Right now, it is 4:23 p.m. on August 15th, 2013. And the article on George Lansbury is as follows. George Lansbury, P.C., born February 22, 1859, died May 7, 1940, was a British politician and social reformer who led the Labour Party from 1932 to 1935. Apart from a brief period of ministerial office during the Labour government of 1929 through 31, he spent his political life campaigning against established authority and vested interests, his main causes being the promotion of social justice, women's rights, and world disarmament. Originally a radical liberal, Lansbury converted to socialism in the early 1890s, and thereafter served his local community in the East End of London in numerous elective offices. His activities were underpinned by his Christian beliefs, which, except for a short period of doubt, sustained him through his life. Elected to Parliament in 1910, he resigned his seat in 1912 to campaign for women's suffrage, and was briefly imprisoned after publicly supporting militant action. In 1912, Lansbury helped to establish the Daily Herald newspaper and became its editor. Throughout the First World War, the paper maintained a strongly pacifist stance and supported the October 1917 Russian Revolution. These positions contributed to Lansbury's failure to be elected to Parliament in 1918. He devoted himself to local politics in his home borough of Poplar and went to prison with 30 fellow councillors for his part in the Poplar Rates Revolt of 1921. After his return to Parliament in 1922, Lansbury was denied office in the brief Labour government of 1924, although he served as First Commissioner of Works in the Labour government of 1929 through 31. After the political and economic crisis of August of 1931, Lansbury did not follow his leader, Ramsay MacDonald, into the national government, but stayed with the Labour Party. As the most senior of the small contingent of Labour MPs that survived the 1931 general election, Lansbury became the party's leader. His pacifism and opposition to rearmament in the face of rising European fascism put him at odds with his party, and when his position was rejected at the 1935 party conference, he resigned the leadership. He spent his final years traveling through the United States and Europe in the cause of peace and disarmament. Section 1, Early Life. Section 1, Subsection 1, East End Upbringing. George Lansbury was born in Halesworth in the county of Suffolk on February 22, 1859. He was the third of nine children born to a railway worker, also named George Lansbury, and Anne Nae Ferris. George's senior job involved the supervision of railroad construction gangs. The family was often on the move, and living conditions were primitive. Through his progressive-minded mother and grandmother, young George became familiar with the names of great contemporary reformers, Gladstone, Richard Cobden, and John Bright, and began to read the radical Reynolds's newspaper. By the end of 1868, the family had moved into London's East End, the district in which Lansbury would live and work for almost all his life. The essayist Ronald Blyth has described the East End of the 1860s and 1870s as, open quote, stridently English, ellipsis. The smoke-blackened streets were packed with illiterate multitudes, open bracket who, closed bracket, stayed alive through sheer bird-like ebullience, end quote. Interspersed with spells of work, Lansbury attended schools in Bethnal Green and Whitechapel. He then held a succession of manual jobs, including work as a coaling contractor in partnership with his elder brother James, loading and unloading coal wagons. This was heavy and dangerous work and led to at least one near-fatal accident. During his adolescence and early manhood, Lansbury was a regular attender at the public gallery at the House of Commons, where he heard and remembered many of Gladstone's speeches on the foreign policy issue of the day, the open quote, Eastern question, closed quote. He was present at the riots which erupted outside Gladstone's house on February 24, 1878, after a peace meeting in Hyde Park. Shepherd writes that Gladstone's liberalism, proclaiming liberty, freedom, and community interests, was, open quote, a heady mix that left an indelible mark, closed quote, on the youthful Lansbury. George Lansbury Sr. died in 1875. That year, young George met 14-year-old Elizabeth Brine, whose father, Isaac Brine, owned a local sawmill. The couple eventually married in 1880 at Whitechapel Parish Church, where the vicar, J. Franklin Quito, had been Lansbury's spiritual guide and counselor. Apart from a period of doubt in the 1890s when he rejected the church, Lansbury remained a staunch Anglican for the rest of his life. Section 1, subsection 2 denoted Australia. In 1881, the first of Lansbury's 12 children, Bessie, was born. Another daughter, Annie, followed in 1882. Seeking to improve his family's prospects, Lansbury decided that their best hopes of prosperity lay in emigrating to Australia. The London Agent General for Queensland depicted a land of boundless opportunities with work for all. Seduced by this appeal, Lansbury and Bessie raised the necessary passage money, and in May of 1884 set sail with their children for Brisbane. On the outward passage, the family experienced illness, discomfort, and danger. On one occasion, the ship came close to foundering during a monsoon. On arrival at Brisbane in July of 1884, Lansbury found that contrary to the London agent's promises, there was a superfluity of labor and work. Superfluity of labor and work was hard to find. His first job, breaking stone, proved to be too physically punishing. He moved to a better paid position as a van driver, but was sacked when, for religious reasons, he refused to work on Sundays. He then contracted to work on a farm some 80 miles inland, to find on arrival that his employer had misled him about living conditions and terms of employment. For several months, the family lived in extreme squalor before Lansbury secured release from the contract. Back in Brisbane, he worked for a while at the newly built Brisbane Cricket Ground. As a keen follower of the game, he hoped to see the visiting English touring team play, but, as Lansbury's biographer Raymond Postgate records, open quote, he learned that cricket watching was not a pleasure for workmen, unquote. Throughout his time in Australia, Lansbury sent letters home, revealing the truth about conditions facing immigrants. To a friend he wrote in March of 1885, open quote, mechanics are not wanted. Farm laborers are not wanted, ellipsis. Hundreds of men and women are not able to get work, ellipsis. The streets are foul day and night, and if I had a sister, I would shoot her dead rather than see her brought out to this little hell on earth, closed quote. In May of 1885, having received from Isaac Brine sufficient funds for a passage home, the Lansburys left Australia for good. Section 2, entitled Radical Liberal. Section 2, subsection 1, entitled First Campaigns. On his return to London, Lansbury took a job in Brine's timber business. In his spare time, he campaigned on the false prospectuses offered by colonial emigration agents. His speech at an emigration conference at King's College in London in April of 1886 impressed delegates. Shortly afterwards, the government established an emigration information bureau under the Colonial Office. This body was required to provide accurate information on the state of labor markets in all the government's overseas possessions. Having joined the Liberal Party shortly after his return from Australia, Lansbury became first a ward secretary and then general secretary for the Bow and Bromley Liberal and Radical Association. His effective campaigning skills had been noted by leading liberals, including Samuel Montagu, the Liberal MP for Whitechapel, who persuaded the young activist to be his agent in the 1885 general election. Lansbury's handling of this election campaign prompted Montagu to urge him to stand for Parliament himself. Lansbury declined this, partly on practical grounds, MPs were then unpaid and he had to provide for his family, and partly on principle. He was becoming increasingly convinced that his future lay not as a radical liberal, but as a socialist. He continued to serve the liberals as an agent and local secretary, while expressing his socialism in a short-lived monthly radical journal, Coming Times, which he founded and co-edited with a fellow dissident, William Hoffman. First section, subsection 2, entitled London County Council Elections, 1889. In 1888, Lansbury agreed to act as election agent for Jane Cobden, who was contesting the first elections for the newly formed London County Council as Liberal candidate for the Bow and Bromley division. Cobden, an early supporter of women's suffrage, was the fourth child of the Victorian radical statesman Richard Cobden. The Society for Promoting Women as County Councillors, SPWCC, a new women's rights group, had proposed Cobden as the candidate for Bow and Bromley and Margaret Sandhurst for Brixton. Lansbury counseled Cobden in the issues of great concern to the East End electorate: housing for the poor, ending of sweated labor, rights of public assembly, and control of the police. Specific questions of women's rights were largely avoided during the campaign. On January 19, 1889, both women were elected. These triumphs were, however, short-lived. Sandhurst's qualification to serve as a county councillor was successfully challenged in the courts by her Conservative Party opponents on the grounds of her sex, and her subsequent appeal was dismissed. Cobden was not immediately challenged, but in April of 1891, after a series of legal actions, she was effectively neutered as a councillor by being prevented from voting on pain of severe financial penalties. Lansbury urged her during the hearings to, open quote, "go to prison and let the council back you up by refusing to declare your seat vacant," close quote. Cobden did not follow this path. A bill introduced in the House of Commons in May of 1891 permitting women to serve as county councillors found little support among MPs of any party. Women were not granted this right until 1907. Lansbury was offended by his party's lukewarm support for women's rights. In a letter published in the Pall Mall Gazette, he made an open call to Bow and Bromley's liberals to, open quote, "shake themselves free of party feeling and throw the energy and ability they are now wasting on minor questions into, ellipsis, securing the rights of full citizenship of every woman in the land," close quote. He was further disillusioned by his party's failure to endorse the 8-hour maximum working day. Lansbury had formed the view, expressed some years later, that, open quote, "liberalism would progress just as far as the great money bags of capitalism would allow it to progress," closed quote. By 1892, the liberals no longer felt like Lansbury's political home. Most of his current associates were avowed socialists: William Morris, Eleanor Marx, John Burns, and Henry Mayers Hindman, founder of the Social Democratic Federation, SDF. Nevertheless, Lansbury did not resign from the Liberals until he had fulfilled a commitment to act as election agent for John Murray MacDonald, the prospective Liberal candidate for Bow and Bromley. He saw his candidate victories in the July 1892 general election. As soon as the result was declared, Lansbury resigned from the Liberal Party and joined the SDF. Section 3, Socialist Reformer. Section 3.1, Social Democratic Federation. Lansbury's choice for the SDF from several socialist organizations reflected his admiration for Hyndman, whom he considered, open quote, one of the truly great ones, close quote. Lansbury quickly became the Federation's most tireless propagandist, traveling throughout Britain to address meetings or to demonstrate solidarity with workers involved in industrial disputes. Around this time, Lansbury temporarily set aside his Christian beliefs and became a member of the East London Ethical Society. One factor in his disillusion with the church was the local clergy's unsympathetic approach to poor relief and their opposition to collective political action. In 1895, Lansbury fought two parliamentary elections for the SDF in Walworth, first a by-election on May 14th, then the 1895 general election 2 months later. Despite his energetic campaigning, he was heavily defeated on each occasion, with tiny proportions of the vote. After these dismal results, Lansbury was persuaded by Hyndman to give up his job at the sawmill and become the SDF's full-time salaried national organizer. He preached a straightforward revolutionary doctrine, open quote, "The time has arrived," close quote. He informed an audience at Tod Morden in Lancashire, open quote, "for the working classes to seize political power and use it to overthrow the competitive system and establish in its place state cooperation," close quote. Lansbury's time as SDF national organizer was, however, short-lived. In 1896, when Isaac Brine died suddenly, Lansbury thought that his family duty required him to take charge of the sawmill, and he returned home to bow. In the general election of 1900, a pact with the Liberals in the Bow and Bromley constituency gave Lansbury, the SDF candidate, a straight fight against the conservative incumbent, William Guthrie. Lansbury's cause was hindered by his political opposition to the Boer War at a time when war fever was strong, while Guthrie, a former soldier, stressed his military credentials. Lansbury lost the election, though his total of 2,258 votes against Guthrie's 4,403 was considered creditable by the press. This campaign was Lansbury's last major effort on behalf of the SDF. He became disenchanted by Hyndman's inability to work with other socialist groups, and in about 1903 resigned from the SDF to join the Independent Labor Party, ILP, At around this time, Lansbury rediscovered his Christian faith and rejoined the Anglican Church. Section 3.2, Poor Law Guardian. There is a sidebar in blue, which it's a quotation of Lansbury summarizing the extent of cronyism and abuse in the poor law system. And this quotation from Lansbury is as follows. "You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours" was the basis of policy where jobs and contracts were concerned. Ellipsis, the slum owner and agent could be depended upon to create the conditions which produce disease. The doctor would then get the job of attending the sick. The chemist would be needed to supply drugs, the parson to pray, and when, between them all, the victims died, the undertaker was on hand to bury them. And that ends the sidebar. I'm now going to read the body of the text under section 3.2, Poor Law Guardian. In April of 1893, Lansbury achieved his first elective office when he became a poor law guardian for the district of Poplar. In place of the traditionally harsh workhouse regime that was the norm, Lansbury proposed a program of reform, whereby the workhouse became, open quote, "an agency of help instead of a place of despair," close quote, and the stigma of poverty was removed. Lansbury was one of a minority socialist bloc, which was often able, through its energy and commitment, to win support for its plans. Education for the poor was one of Lansbury's major concerns. He helped to transform the Forest Gate District School, previously a punitive establishment run on quasi-military lines, into a proper place of education that became the Poplar Training School and was still in existence more than half a century later. At the 1897 annual Poor Law Conference, Lansbury summarized his views on poor relief in his published paper, open quote, The Principles of the English Poor Law, close quote. His analysis offered a Marxist critique of capitalism. Only the reorganization of industry on collectivist lines would solve contemporary problems. Lansbury added to his public duties when, in 1903, he was elected to Poplar Borough Council. In the summer of that year, he met Joseph Fells, a rich American soap manufacturer with a penchant for social projects. Lansbury persuaded Fells in 1904 to purchase a 100-acre farm at Landen in Essex, which was converted into a labor colony that provided regular work for Poplar's unemployed and destitute. Fells also agreed to finance a much larger colony at Housley Bay in Suffolk to be operated as a government scheme under the local government board. Both projects were initially successful, but were undermined after the election of a liberal government in 1906. The new local government minister was John Burns, a former SDF stalwart, now ensconced in the Liberal Party, who had become a firm opponent of socialism. Burns encouraged a campaign of propaganda to discredit the principle of labor colonies, which were presented as money-wasting ventures that pampered idlers and scroungers. A formal inquiry revealed irregularities in the operation of the scheme, though it exonerated Lansbury. He retained the confidence of his electorate and was easily re-elected to the Board of Guardians in 1907. In 1905, Lansbury was appointed to a Royal Commission on the Poor Laws, which deliberated for 4 years. Lansbury, together with Beatrice Webb of the Fabian Society, argued for the complete abolition of the Poor Laws and their replacement by a system that incorporated old age pensions, a minimum wage, and national and local public works projects. These proposals were embodied at the Commission's conclusion in a minority report signed by Lansbury and Webb. The majority report was, according to Postgate, open quote, an ill-considered jumble of suggestions, ellipsis, so preposterously inadequate that no attempts were ever made to implement it, closed quote. Most of the minority's recommendations in time became national policy. The poor laws were finally abolished by the Local Government Act of 1929. Section 4, National Prominence, Section 4.1, Campaigner for William Suffrage. In the general election of January of 1906, Lansbury stood as an independent socialist candidate in Middlesbrough on a strong, open quote, votes for women, close quote, platform. This was his first campaign based on women's rights since the LCC election of 1889. He had been recommended to the constituency by Joseph Fells, who agreed to meet his expenses. The local ILP leadership was committed by an electoral pact to support the Liberal candidate and could not endorse Lansbury, who secured less than 9% of the vote. The campaign had been managed by Marion Coates Hansen, a prominent local suffragist. Under Hansen's influence, Lansbury took up the cause of, open quote, votes for women, close quote. He allied himself with the Women's Social and Political Union, open paren, WSPU, closed paren, the more militant of the main suffragist organizations, and became a close associate of Emmeline Pankhurst and her family. The Liberal government elected in 1906 with a large majority showed little interest in the issue of women's suffrage. When they lost their parliamentary majority in the general election of January of 1910, they were dependent on the votes of the 40-odd Labour members. To Lansbury's dismay, Labour did not use this leverage to promote votes for women, instead giving the government virtually unqualified support to keep the Conservatives out of power. Lansbury had failed to win election as Labour's candidate at Bough and Bromley in January of 1910. However, the continuing political crisis, which developed from David Lloyd George's controversial 1909 open quote people's budget close quote, led to another general election in December of 1910. Lansbury again fought Bough and Bromley, and this time was successful. Lansbury found little support in his support for women's suffrage from his parliamentary Labour colleagues, whom he dismissed as, quote, open quote, a weak, flabby lot, close quote. In Parliament, he denounced the Prime Minister, Herbert Asquith, for the cruelties being inflicted on imprisoned suffragists, open quote, you are beneath contempt, you ought to be driven from public life, close quote. He was temporarily suspended from the House for, open quote, disorderly conduct, close quote. In October of 1912, aware of the unbridgeable gap between his own position and that of his Labour colleagues, Lansbury resigned his seat to fight a by-election in Bough and Bromley on the specific issue of women's suffrage. He lost to his Conservative opponent, who campaigned on the slogan, open quote, no petticoat government, close quote. Commenting on the result, the Labour MP Will Thorne opined that no constituency would ever be won on the single question of votes for women. Out of Parliament, on April 26, 1913, Lansbury addressed a WSPU rally at the Albert Hall and openly defended violent methods. Open quote, let them burn and destroy property and do anything they will, and for every leader that is taken away, let a dozen step forward in their place, close quote. For this, Lansbury was charged with incitement, convicted and, after the dismissal of an appeal, sentenced to 3 months imprisonment. He immediately went on hunger strike and was released after 4 days, although liable to re-arrest under the so-called, open quote, Cat and Mouse Act, closed quote. He was thereafter left at liberty. In the autumn of 1913, at the invitation of Fells, Lansbury and his wife traveled to America and Canada for an extended holiday. On his return, he devoted his main efforts to the recently founded newspaper, the Daily Herald. Section 4.2, War, Daily Herald, and Bolshevism. And Wikipedia provides a link for further information to an article on the Daily Herald UK newspaper. But the text of Section 4.2 is as follows. The Daily Herald began as a temporary bulletin during the London printer strike of 1910 and 1911. After the strike ended, Lansbury and others raised sufficient funds for the Herald to be relaunched in April 1912 as a socialist daily newspaper. The paper attracted contributions from distinguished writers such as H.G. Wells, Hilaire Belloc, G.K. Chesterton, and George Bernard Shaw, some of whom, Blythe notes, open quote, weren't socialists at all, but simply used, open bracket, the paper, closed bracket, as a platform for their personal literary anarchy, closed quote. Lansbury contributed regularly in support of his various causes, in particular the militant suffrage campaign, and early in 1914 assumed the paper's editorship. Before the outbreak of the First World War in August of 1914, the Herald took a strong anti-war line. Addressing a large demonstration in Trafalgar Square on August 2, 1914, Lansbury blamed the coming conflict on capitalism. Open quote, the workers of all countries have no quarrel. They are, ellipsis, exploited in times of peace and sent out to be massacred in times of war, closed quote. Lansbury's position was at odds with that of most of the labor movement, which allied itself with the wartime coalition governments of Asquith and, from 1916, Lloyd George. In the prevailing jingoistic mood, numerous readers looked to the Herald, reduced by wartime economies to a weekly format, to present a balanced news perspective untainted by war fever and chauvinism. During the winter of 1914-1915, Lansbury visited the Western Front trenches. he sent eyewitness accounts to the paper, which supported calls for a negotiated peace with Germany, such as that proposed by Woodrow Wilson in his open quote peace note closed quote of January of 1917. The paper also gave sympathetic coverage to conscientious objectors and to Irish and Indian nationalists. Lansbury used the pages of the Daily Herald to welcome the February of 1917 revolution in Russia as, open quote, a new star of hope ellipsis arisen over Europe, close quote. At an Albany Hall rally on March 18th, 1918, he hailed the spirit and enthusiasm of, open quote, this Russian movement, close quote, and urged his audience to, open quote, be ready to die if necessary for our faith, close quote. When the war ended in November of 1918, Lloyd George called an immediate general election, correctly calculating that victory euphoria would keep his coalition in power. In this triumphalist climate, candidates such as Lansbury, who had opposed the war, found themselves unpopular, and he failed to retake his Bow and Bromley seat. The Herald re-emerged as a daily paper in March of 1919. Under Lansbury's direction, it maintained a strong and ultimately successful campaign against British intervention in the Russian Civil War. In February of 1920, Lansbury traveled to Russia, where he met Lenin and other Bolshevik leaders. He published an account, What I Saw in Russia, but the impact of the visit was overshadowed by accusations that the Herald was being financed from Bolshevist sources, a charge vehemently denied by Lansbury. Open quote, we have received no Bolshevist money, no Bolshevist paper, no Bolshevist bonds, close quote. Unknown to Lansbury, the allegations had some truth which, when exposed, caused him and the paper considerable embarrassment. By 1922, the Herald's financial problems had become such that it could no longer continue as a private venture financed by donations. Lansbury resigned the editorship and made the paper over to the Labor Party and the Trades Union Congress, open paren, TUC, close paren, although he continued to write for it and remained its titular general manager until January 3, 1925. Section 4.3, open quote, popularism, closed quote, colon, the 1921 rates revolt. There is an article, there is an hyperlinked article on Wikipedia about the popular rates rebellion. I am now going to read the text under section 4.3. Throughout his national campaigns, Lansbury remained a popular borough councillor and poor law guardian, and between 1910 and 1913 served a three-year term as a London County councillor. In 1919, he became the first Labour mayor of Poplar. Under the existing financial system for local government, boroughs were individually responsible for poor relief within their boundaries. This discriminated heavily against poorer councils such as Poplar, where rates revenues were low and poverty and unemployment, always severe, were exacerbated in times of economic recession. Under this system, Postgate argues, open quote, the wealthy West End boroughs were evading responsibility, as though the desolate and silent docks were the results of a failure by the Poplar borough councillor, closed quote. In addition to meeting the costs of its own obligations, the council was required to levy precepts to pay for services provided by bodies such as the London Council and the Metropolitan Police. Lansbury had long argued that a degree of rates equalization across London was necessary to share costs more fairly. At its meeting on March 22, 1921, the Poplar Council resolved not to make its precepts and to apply these revenues to the costs of local poor relief. This illegal action created a sensation and led to legal proceedings against the council. On July 29th, the 30 councillors involved marched in procession from Bow to the High Court, headed by a brass band. Informed by the judge that they must apply the precepts, the councillors would not budge. Early in September, Lansbury and 29 fellow counselors were imprisoned for contempt of court. Among those sentenced were his son Edgar and Edgar's wife Minnie. The defiance of the popular counselors generated widespread interest and sympathy, and the publicity embarrassed the government. Several other labor-controlled councils, paren, including Stepney, whose mayor was the future labor leader Clement Attlee, closed paren, threatened similar policies. After 6 weeks incarceration, the councilors were released, and a government conference was convened to resolve the matter. This conference brought a significant personal victory for Lansbury, the passage of the Local Authorities, open paren, Financial Provisions, close paren, Act, which equalized the poor relief burden across all the London boroughs. As a result, the rates in Poplar fell by a third, and additional revenues of £400,000 was gained by the borough. Lansbury was hailed as a hero. In the 1922 general election, he won the parliamentary seat of Bow and Bromley with a majority of nearly 7,000, and would hold it for the rest of his life. The term open quote poplarism close quote, always identified closely with Lansbury, became part of the political lexicon, applied generally to campaigns where local government stood against central government on behalf of the poor and least privileged of society. Section 5. Parliament and National Office. Section 5.1. Labor Backbencher. And adjacent to the text I will be reading is a text box with a quotation that is denoted as being Lansbury's warning to the king shortly before the first Labour government took office in January of 1924. And here is what Lansbury had his warning. A few centuries ago, one king who stood up against the common people of that day lost his head, really lost it, ellipsis. Since that day, kings and queens had been what they ought to be if you had them. They never interfered with ordinary politics, and George V would be well advised to keep his finger out of the pie now. That ends the text box quotation. I'm now going to read the text in the Wikipedia article of section 5.1. In May of 1923, the Conservative Prime Minister, Andrew Bonar Law, resigned for health reasons. In December, his successor, Stanley Baldwin, called another election in which the Conservatives lost their majority, with Labour in a strong second place. King George V advised Baldwin, as leader of the largest party, not to resign his office until defeated by a vote in the House of Commons. Defeat duly occurred on January 21, 1924, when the Liberals decided to throw in their lot with Labour. The King then asked Labour's leader, Ramsay MacDonald, to form a government. Lansbury caused royal offense by publicly implying that the King had colluded with other parties to keep Labour out, and by his references to the fate of Charles I. Despite his seniority, Lansbury was offered only a junior non-cabinet post in the new government, which he declined. He believed that his exclusion from the cabinet followed pressure from the king. MacDonald's administration lasted less than a year before, in November of 1924. The Liberals withdrew their support. Blythe suggests that the first Labour government had been, open quote, neither exhilarating nor competent, closed quote. According to Shepherd, MacDonald's chief priority was to show that Labour was, open quote, fit to govern, closed quote, and he had thus acted with conservative caution. The December general election returned the Conservatives to power. Lansbury maintained that Labour's cause, open quote, marches forward irrespective of electoral results, closed quote. After the defeat, Lansbury was briefly touted as an alternative party leader to MacDonald, a proposition he rejected. In 1925, free from the Daily Herald, he founded and edited Lansbury's Labour Weekly, which became a mouthpiece for his personal creed of socialism, democracy, and pacifism, until it merged with the new leader in 1927. Before the general strike of May of 1926, Lansbury used the weekly to instruct the Trades Union Congress, paren, TUC, paren, on preparations for the coming struggle. However, when the strike came, the TUC did not want his assistance. Among the reasons for their distrust was Lansbury's continuing advocacy for the right of communist organizations to affiliate to the Labor Party. He privately opined that British communists on their own, open quote, couldn't run a Welkstal, closed quote. Lansbury continued his private campaigns in Parliament, saying, open quote, I intend on every occasion to hinder the progress of business, closed quote. In April of 1926, he and 12 other opposition MPs prevented a vote in the House of Commons by obstructing the voting lobbies. They were temporarily suspended by the Speaker. During frequent clashes in the House with Neville Chamberlain, the Minister of Health responsible for poor law administration and reform, Lansbury referred to the, open quote, Ministry of Death, closed quote, and called the minister a, open quote, Pinchbeck Napoleon, closed quote. However, within the Labour Party itself, Lansbury's status and popularity led to his election as the party's chairman, paren, a largely titular office, paren, in 1927 and 1928. Lansbury also became president of the International League Against Imperialism, where among his fellow executive members were Jawaharlal Nehru, Madame Sun, or MME period Sun Yat-sen, and Albert Einstein. In 1928, short of money following the failure of the family business, Lansbury published his autobiography, My Life, for which he received what he termed a, open quote, what he termed, open quote, a fairly generous check, close quote, from the publishers Constable and Company. Section 5.1, Cabinet Minister, 1929 through 1931. In the 1929 general election, Labour emerged as the largest party, with 287 seats but without an overall majority. Once again, Macdonald formed a government dependent on Liberal support. Lansbury joined the new cabinet as First Commissioner of Works, with responsibilities for historic buildings and monuments and for the Royal Parks. This position was widely regarded as a sinecure. Nevertheless, Lansbury proved an active minister who did much to improve public recreation facilities. His most notable achievement was the Lido on the Serpentine in Hyde Park. According to the historian A.J.P. Taylor, open quote, the only thing which keeps the memory of the second Labour government alive, closed quote. Lansbury's duties brought him into frequent contact with the king, who as ranger of the Royal Parks insisted on regular consultation. Contrary to expectations, the two formed a cordial relationship. The years of the Macdonald second government were dominated by the economic depression that followed the Wall Street crash of October of 1929. Lansbury was appointed to a committee, chaired by J.H. Thomas and including the youthful Oswald Mosley, charged with finding a solution to unemployment. Mosley produced a memorandum which called for a large-scale program of public works. This was rejected by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Snowden, on grounds of cost. At the end of July 1931, the May Committee, appointed in February to investigate government spending, prescribed heavy cuts, including a massive reduction in unemployment benefit. During August, in an atmosphere of financial panic and a run on the pound, the government debated the report. Macdonald and Snowden were prepared to implement it, but Lansbury and nine other cabinet ministers rejected the cut in unemployment benefit. Thus divided, the government could not continue. Macdonald, however, did not resign as prime minister. After discussions with the opposition leaders and the king, he formed a national all-party coalition with a, open quote, doctor's mandate, close quote, to tackle the economic crisis. The great majority of Labour MPs, including Lansbury, were opposed to this action. Macdonald and the few who followed him were expelled from the party, and Arthur Henderson became leader. Macdonald's move was broadly welcomed in the country, however, and in the general election held in October of 1931, the national government was returned with an enormous majority. Labor was reduced to 46 members. Lansbury was the only senior member of the Labor leadership to retain his seat. Section 6, Party Leader. Although defeated in the election, Henderson remained the party leader while Lansbury headed the small parliamentary Labour Party, (PLP). In October 1932, Henderson resigned and Lansbury succeeded him. In most historians' reckonings, Lansbury led his small parliamentary force with skill and flair. He was also, says Shepherd, an inspiration to the dispirited Labour rank and file. As leader, he began the process of reforming the party's organization and machinery, efforts which resulted in considerable by-election and municipal election successes, including control of the LCC under Herbert Morrison in 1934. According to Blythe, Lansbury, open quote, represented political hope and decency to the 3 million unemployed, close quote. During this period, Lansbury published his political credo, My England, (1934), which envisioned a future socialist state achieved by a mixture of revolutionary and evolutionary methods. Below this paragraph, there is a sidebar, which is a quote from Lansbury's speech to the 1935 Labour Party conference. It reads, "I believe that force never has and never will bring permanent peace and goodwill in the world." God intends us to live peacefully and quietly with one another. If some people do not allow us to do so, I am ready to stand as the early Christians did and say, this is our faith, this is where we stand, and if necessary, this is where we will die. To continue the quote from section six on party leader, the small labor group had little influence over economic policy. Lansbury's term as leader was dominated by foreign affairs and disarmament, and by policy disagreements within the labor movement. The official party position was based on collective security through the League of Nations and on multilateral disarmament. Lansbury, supported by many in the PLP, moved into a position of Christian pacifism, unilateral disarmament, and the dismantling of the British Empire. Under his influence, the party's 1933 conference passed resolutions calling for the, open quote, total disarmament of all nations, close quote, and pledged to take no part in war. Pacifism became temporarily popular in the country. On February 9, 1933, the Oxford Union voted by 275 to 153 that it would, open quote, in no circumstances fight for its king and country, close quote. And the Fulham East by-election in October 1933 was easily won by a Labour candidate committed to full disarmament. Lansbury sent a message to the constituency in his party as Labour leader, open quote, I would close every recruiting station, disband the army and disarm the Air Force. I would abolish the whole dreadful equipment of war and say to the world, inner open quote, do your worst inner close quote, outer close quote. October 1934 saw the emergence of the Peace Pledge Union. The 1934 through 1935 peace ballot, an unofficial public referendum, produced massive majorities against war. Meanwhile, Adolf Hitler had come to power in Germany and had withdrawn from the International Conference on Disarmament in Geneva. Blythe observes that Britain's noisy flirtations with pacifism, open quote, drowned out the sounds from German dockyards, close quote, as German rearmament began. As fascism and militarism advanced in Europe, Lansbury's pacifist stance drew criticism from the trades union elements of the party, of his party, who controlled the majority of party conference votes. Walter Citrine, the TUC general secretary, commented that Lansbury, open quote, thinks the country should be without defense of any kind, It certainly isn't our policy, closed quote. The party's 1935 annual conference took place in Brighton during October, under the shadow of Italy's impending invasion of Abyssinia. the National Executive had tabled a resolution calling for sanctions against Italy, which Lansbury opposed as a form of economic welfare. His speech, a passionate exposition of the principles of Christian pacifism, was well received by the delegates, but immediately afterwards his position was destroyed by Ernest Bevin, the Transport and General Workers Union leader. Bevin attacked Lansbury for putting his private beliefs before a policy, agreed by all the party's main institutions to oppose fascist aggression, and accused him of, open quote, hawking your conscience round from body to body, asking to be told what to do with it, closed quote. Union support ensured that the sanctions resolution was carried by a huge majority. Lansbury, realizing that a Christian pacifist could no longer lead the party, resigned a few days later. Section 7, final years. I'm going to first read the sidebar, which, in keeping with the structure of this article, it's a quotation from Lansbury, and it is denoted as being his impressions after meeting Adolf Hitler in April of 1937. Lansbury's words are as follows. Open bracket Hitler, close bracket, appeared free of personal ambition, wasn't ashamed of his humble start in life, ellipsis, lived in the country rather than the town, ellipsis, was a bachelor who liked children and old people, ellipsis, and was obviously lonely. I wished that I could have gone to Berchtesgaden and stayed with him for a little while. I felt that Christianity, in its purest sense, might have had a chance with him. And then the text next to the sidebar reads as follows. Lansbury was 76 years old when he resigned the labor leadership. He did not, however, retire from public life. In the general election of November 1935, he kept his seat at Bow and Bromley. Labor, now led by Attlee, improved its parliamentary representation to 154. Lansbury devoted himself entirely to the cause of world peace, a quest that took him, in 1936, to the United States. He addressed large crowds in 27 cities before meeting President Roosevelt in Washington to present his proposals for a world peace conference. In 1937, he toured Europe, visiting leaders in Belgium, France, and Scandinavia, and in April secured a private meeting with Hitler. No official report of the discussion was issued, but Lansbury's personal memorandum indicates that Hitler expressed willingness to join in a world conference if Roosevelt would convene it. Later that year, Lansbury met Mussolini in Rome. He described the Italian leader as, open quote, a mixture of Lloyd George, Stanley Baldwin, and Winston Churchill, close quote. Lansbury wrote several accounts of his peace journeys. Notably, My Quest for Peace, 1938. His mild and optimistic impressions of the European dictators were widely criticized as naive and out of touch. The Daily Worker accused him of diverting attention from the aggressive realities of fascist policies. He continued to meet European leaders through 1938 and 1939, and was nominated unsuccessfully for the 1940 Nobel Peace Prize. At home, Lansbury served a second term as mayor of Poplar in 1936 through 1937. He argued against direct confrontation with Mosley's Blackshirts during the October 1936 demonstrations known as the Battle of Cable Street. In October 1937, he became president of the Peace Pledge Union, and a year later, he welcomed the Munich Agreement as a step towards peace. During this period, he worked on behalf of refugees from Nazi Germany and was chairman of the Polish Refugee Fund, which provided relief to displaced Jewish children. On September 3, 1939, after Neville Chamberlain's announcement of war with Germany, Lansbury addressed the House of Commons, observing that the cause to which he had dedicated his life was going down in ruin. He added, open quote, I hope that out of this terrible calamity will arise a spirit that will compel people
to give up the reliance on force, close quote. Even in 1940, Lansbury's health began to fail. Although unaware, he was suffering from stomach cancer. In an article published in the Socialist Magazine Tribune, published on April 25, 1940, he made a final statement of his Christian pacifism. Open quote, I hold fast to the truth that this world is big enough for all, that we are all brethren, children of one Father, close quote. Lansbury died on May 7, 1940, at the Manor House Hospital in Golders Green. His funeral in St. Mary's Church, Bow, was followed by cremation at Ilford Crematorium, before a memorial service in Westminster Abbey. His ashes were scattered at sea, in accordance with the wish expressed in his will. Open quote, I desire this because, although I love England very deeply, ellipsis, I am a convinced internationalist, closed quote. Section 8, Tributes and Legacy. Most historical assessments of Lansbury have tended to stress his character and principles rather than his effectiveness as a party political leader. Although Taylor labels him, open quote, the most lovable figure in modern politics, close quote, and the outstanding figure of the English revolutionary left in the 20th century, Kenneth O. Morgan, in his biography of a later labor leader, Michael Foote, perceives Lansbury as, open quote, an agitator of protest, not a politician of power, closed quote. Journalists commonly accused Lansbury of sentimentality, and party intellectuals accused him of lacking mental capacity. Nevertheless, his speeches in the House of Commons were often flavored with historical and literary allusions, and he left behind a considerable body of writing on socialist ideas. Morgan refers to him as a, open quote, prophet, closed quote. Foote, who as a young man met and was influenced by Lansbury, was particularly impressed by the older man's achievements in establishing the Daily Herald, given his complete lack of journalistic training. Nevertheless, Foote felt that Lansbury's pacifism was unrealistic and believed that Bevin's demolition of the 1935 conference was justified. There is much agreement among historians and analysts that Lansbury was never self-serving and, guided by his Christian socialist principles, was consistent in his efforts on behalf of the poorest in society. Shepherd believes that, open quote, there could have been no better leader for the Labour Party at the collapse of its political fortunes in 1931 than Lansbury, a universally popular choice and a source of inspiration among Labour ranks, close quote. In the House of Commons on May 8, 1940, the day following Lansbury's death, Chamberlain said of him, open quote, there were not many honorable members who felt convinced of the practicability of the methods which he advocated for the preservation of peace, but there was no one who did not realize his intense conviction, which arose out of his deep humanitarianism, close quote. Attlee also paid tribute to his former leader, open quote, he hated cruelty, injustice, and wrongs, and felt deeply for all who suffered. Open bracket H, close bracket, he was ever the champion of the weak, and ellipsis, to the end of his life, he strove for that in which he believed. After the Second World War, a stained glass window designed by the Belgian artist Eugene Yors was placed in the Kingsley Hall Community Center in Bow as a memorial to Lansbury. His memory is further sustained by streets and housing developments named after him, most notably the Lansbury Estate in Poplar, completed in 1951, which covers the site of the former family home in Bow Road. A further enduring memorial, Attlee suggests, is the extent to which the then-revolutionary social policies that Lansbury began advocating before the turn of the 20th century had become accepted mainstream doctrine little more than a decade after his death. Section 9, Personal and Family Life. For most of their married life, George and Bessie Lansbury lived in Bow, originally in St. Stephen's Road and, from 1916, at 39 Bow Road, a house which, Shepherd records, became, open quote, a political haven, close quote, for those requiring assistance of any kind. Bessie died in 1933, after 53 years of a marriage that had produced 12 children between 1881 and 1905. Of the 10 who survived to adulthood, Edgar followed his father into local political activism as a poplar councillor in 1912, serving as the borough's mayor in 1924 and 1925. He was for a time a member of the Communist Party of Great Britain, open paren CPGB, close paren. After the death of his first wife, Minnie, in 1922, Edgar married Moina McGill, an actress from Belfast. Their daughter, Angela Lansbury, born in 1925, became a famous stage and screen actress. George Lansbury's youngest daughter, Violet, open paren 1900 to 1971, close paren, was an active CPGB member in the 1920s, who lived and worked in Moscow for many years. She married Clemens Palmedut, the brother of the prominent Marxist intellectual Rajani Palmedut. Another daughter, Dorothy, paren 1890 to 1973 paren, was a women's rights activist and later a campaigner for contraceptive and abortion rights. She married Ernest Thurtle, the Labour MP for Shoreditch, and was herself a member of Shoreditch Council, serving as mayor in 1936. She and her husband founded the Workers' Birth Control Group in 1924. Her younger sister Daisy, paren 1892 to 1971 paren, served as George Lansbury's secretary for 20 years. In 1913, she helped Sylvia Pankhurst to evade political capture by disguising herself as Pankhurst. She was married to Raymond Postgate, the left-wing writer and historian, who was Lansbury's first biographer, and founded The Good Food Guide. Their son, Oliver Postgate, was a successful writer, animator, and producer for children's television. The Lansbury home in Bow Road was destroyed by bombing during the London Blitz of 1940 through 1941. Section 10, Books by Lansbury. The first listed is Your Part in Poverty, published in London by Allen and Unwin in 1918. The second book, These Things Shall Be, published in London by Swathorne Press in 1920. Third book, What I Saw in Russian, in Russia, published in London by L. Parsons in 1920. The fourth book is My Life, published in London by Constable and Company in 1928. The fifth book is My England, published in London by Selwyn and Blount in 1934. The sixth book is Looking Backwards and Forwards, published in London and Glasgow by Blackie and Son in 1935. The next book is Why Pacifists Should Be Socialists, published in London by FACT in 1937. The next book is My Quest for Peace, published in London by M. Joseph in 1938. And the last book listed is This Way to Peace, published in London by Rich and Cowan in 1940. This ends the Wikipedia article on George Lansbury. My name is Matthew David Gonzalez. I am in Chicago. In London, it is now 5:41 p.m. on August 15th, 2013.